on air, online,
on digital,
and the ABC Listen app. The Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Coming up today, a focus on the red meat industry as returns to producers remain sky high.
Oh, look, we saw average prices across some categories up 30 to 40% for the average high for the fiscal year. Looking at the results, we had almost 100,000 head of PTIC heifers offered throughout the year, and their average price was up 30% on the previous year.
And the new generation taking the CWA forward in the modern era.
We couldn't just go on a lot of old biddies tucking over our cups of tea in the afternoon and wondering where the young ones were. We found out where they were, and we've said, here you are, it's yours. And I think they're doing great things.
Yes, a look at the new look CWA branch in southern Tasmania. That story coming up. And the red meat industry booming along. In just a moment, we'll take you to the red meat update underway in Launceston. And we'll hear about the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator reaching record highs and how the red meat market is giving farmers a third more in their pockets than this time last year. Where will it end? G'day, Tony, with you on this Friday. We're also later in the program, Richard Bailey will dust off the crystal ball to see if he can predict where things are going with the livestock markets. You too can be part of the action anytime via the text line on 0438 922936, 0438 922936. Might be a rough weekend ahead when it comes to the weather. We'll check in with the Bureau at the halfway point of the show. But first up, the red meat industry is under the spotlight at an event in Launceston. Our reporter Luke Radford is at the Red Meat Update and joins the Country Hour. G'day Luke, is there a good turnout for the event?
G'day Tony. Well, I've been to a few events here at the Tram Shed Centre in Launceston before, a few ag events, and I've got to tell you, I've never seen crowds quite like this. They're quite literally out the door on a few, and the auditorium and the side room are absolutely packed for some of the events. But I've got sitting here with me right now someone who has been involved with organising today's event. It's Jamie Downey, who's on the Red Meat Update Board, and he's also a sheep and cattle producer from the Highlands and his property, Dungrove. Jamie, welcome to the Country Hour.
Yeah, thanks Luke. Good to be with you.
Good to have you here. So let's get started. For those listening who might not know what the Red Meat Update is, can you walk us through it?
Yeah, sure. So the Red Meat Updates, it was first put together as a one-day event 8 years ago with Macquarie Franklin at the time, now Opinion Advisory, partnering with MLA. The purpose was to put on a day free of charge for producers to get together and the committee to bring together a wide range of presenters just to keep everyone up to date with what's happening in the industry and contemporary information regarding, you know, pasture and livestock information. It's now evolved today, 8 years later, where, you know, we're at capacity, so, you know, a bit over 300 people here today, majority producers, and, you know, tickets came on sale and were sold out within 12 hours. So it really is a popular and successful event and really great to be part of.
A great day to be here, to be sure. How did you find yourself getting involved?
Yeah, look, the great thing about this event is that it's primarily led by producers. So producers, you know, generally spend 3 to 4 years on the committee, you know, and it keeps the enthusiasm coming through. They bring their own perspective of what they think is important and their own networks in terms of presenters. So, you know, I've really enjoyed being part of it and bringing in speakers that I've found and respect from around the country and brought them in to present to Tasmanian farmers.
I've got to ask, you might be a little bit biased because you're involved with organising it, but do you think that gives the event a bit more cut through with producers and might be why we've got so many people here?
Yeah, I think it is really key to the success of the event. And what's really great too is there's always producers, Tasmanian producers, presenting throughout the day. Just makes it really relevant. People want to hear stories from what's going on in their own area.
Well, speaking of the people who are presenting today, walk us through a couple of the sessions that have been so far that you've been involved with. What have you enjoyed?
I've just walked out of a presentation from John Webb Ware. He is from Melbourne, involved with the McKinnon Project. There's always been a bit of... I've never quite understood fully trace elements in animals and the role they play. So he just delivered a really good presentation on the limit, what the effects limiting trace elements have in production.
When it comes to some of the sessions that are coming up a little bit later on in the day, what have you got your eye on?
I'm looking forward to hearing Dave McLean from Resource Consulting Services. He's talking about basically what is it that you need to be looking at within your business? What information do you really need to have a handle on to run a successful business? So I'm looking forward to that. Also, we've invested in some irrigation, and there's quite a lot of information coming up about management of worms and pastures under irrigation. So I'm really, really excited to sit in on those.
If we take off your organiser hat for a second and turn, I suppose, more to the producing side of things, you run both beef and lamb on your property. It's a pretty good time to be in both. How has the state of things been treating your operation?
Oh, look, I mean, we just heard, you know, cattle is at an all-time high. Lamb's been strong for a number of years, and wool now, you know, took a bit of a hit through the pandemic, is now at pre-COVID levels. So, you know, in terms of prices received, it's never been better. So, you know, looking forward, though, I'm treating this as a time, you know, while it's important to maximise these times, then looking forward, I mean, we're at an absolute boom. But, you know, I'm just conscious that over time, you know, things will adjust to a level. So, you know, how can we use these good times to then strengthen our business when things start to go down?
Fair enough. So all about preparing for the future for you. Well, briefly speaking about the future, something we heard in the opening address is about the UK free trade agreement, which is sort of coming along in the next few years. Is that something you knew much about prior to what you heard this morning?
Look, there was a presentation this morning that expanded more on it, which was great to hear. You know, certainly I wasn't aware of the transition over 10 years. So, yeah, that was great to be kept up to date with that information.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Jamie, you're a busy man. I don't want to hold on to you much longer. So thanks for being with us here on the program today.
Yeah, thanks, Luke.
No worries. That was Jamie Downey, who is on the Red Meat Update board and a sheep and cattle producer from the Highlands at his property, Dungrove. And after this, more from the Red Meat Update here.
Drive with Kylie Baxter.
Finding and telling stories.
I've been working with people and story all my life. I was asked to join the history team doing some transcribing of convict records. But I was just amazed at the records that we have here and at the stories that lie behind all of those records.
Drive with Kylie Baxter.
And it was quite mind-boggling.
Weekdays from 4 p.m.
And I just loved it.
On ABC Radio Hobart.
Keeping you updated every day. The Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
A special event on in Launceston today, the Red Meat Update. Our reporter Luke Radford has another guest.
Yeah, g'day again, Tony, and g'day to everyone listening across Tasmania here at the Red Meat Update at the Tram Sheds Function Centre in Launceston. I've pulled aside someone who was speaking a little bit earlier. It's Claire Peltzer, who's a former Nuffield scholar and also the livestock manager at her family farm, Logan, near Evandale. Claire, welcome back to the Country Hour.
Thank you very much, Luke.
You've come here, obviously, as a speaker, but apart from that, as a producer, what did you come here to learn?
Oh, it's always a range of things on our property. We're looking at how to, maximise that gross margin. And I was listening to Tom Sweeney from Jigsaw Farms on the mainland, and he's talking about confinement feeding, which is something that we might need to look into, especially this year we had such a late autumn break, which puts a lot of pressure on our pastures sort of coming into winter. So that's something that we might look into investing into. So it's great to hear that. And yeah, it's always great for networking. Always nice to see everyone out and about. So, yeah.
A good chance to catch up. Well, actually, on that confinement feeding thing, because most of your operation is pasture fed, isn't it?
Yeah, so we produce a prime lamb to a grass-fed program. So our lambs would remain as grass-fed, but the ewe component of our production system will probably have a look into confinement feeding those. But yeah, keeping the lambs as a pure grass-fed.
So that session this morning, was that more of a taster for you, or did it give you a better insight into what you might potentially be going into?
Yeah, I think every time you hear a conversation about something you're interested in, you take a little bit more out of it. And this is probably now looking into the numbers behind it rather than just the ideas. So I'll take that back to the farm and we'll have a bit better discussion about it and actually see if we can put it into play.
Well, speaking about the other sessions that were on this morning, there was one on technology, which you use a lot over the farm. You've shown me apps for days to keep track of everyone. But this was about individual animal management. How does that compare to what you're doing currently?
The EID tags are definitely the way of the future. The ability to track the individual animal from its birth through to the plate, essentially. It is where we need to go to keep to maintain market access into a lot of our countries. So we haven't currently done it, but we're definitely looking into it as well because of our Our Tapari, for instance, has the capability of reading the EID tags, and I do see the merit in it. So it's just a matter of, adding another change into the system, but making sure we do implement it and take everyone along with the ride, because just because of that market access, which I think is going to be the defining factor of red meat in Tassie.
Yeah,
specifically.
When it comes to making that jump across to the individual management system, how big is that from what you're doing right now?
We do a mob-based information. So I know, for instance, drenching the whole entire mob, I can tell you exactly when they were drenched based on our, we use a farm recording app called AgriWeb that makes sure that I've got everything, for instance, withholding periods and ESI periods. So we're not, making sure that the final animals going for carcass are out of those withholding periods. But the EID of the individual animal will just make sure that, again, we've got individual tracking, not just that mob-based. So it's a bigger step, but I think it's the data that we are going to need.
Before we get on to what you were speaking about this morning, there are a few more sessions coming up this afternoon. Have you had a look? What are you keen on?
No, there's always good ones about dry land and irrigated pastures, and I'm actually not too sure which room I'm going to go into, because I see the merit in the irrigation. I think it's fabulous, but the dry land pastures is quite a big profit driver for our business with such a big mix in topography that we've got out at home. So I think I'm going to go the dry lands just to make sure I'm looking after our feed base.
I might see you running backwards and forwards
in
probably.
The corridor. I'll sit in between.
we're turning quickly to your speech this morning. It's something you're very passionate about, something you've spoken a lot about in the past, which is filling those gaps in ag employment and trying to get more young people into the industry itself. How did you find that received this morning?
Yeah, it's always an interesting one. Interesting when you're writing a speech and thinking of the audience. And I knew that I had a lot of sheep and beef producers in front of me, and so I actually put it back onto them and I said, what are you doing about this? Because it's all very nice to sit here and say that education's got the role or someone else's job, but it does actually come back to that individual where we do need to make sure that they are actually sending a positive message out about their industry too.
Yeah, this might be a bit of a curveball, but when it comes to, there are changing demographics in the north of Tasmania at the moment, and there's a look for growth heading towards in the future, particularly for Launceston, which is obviously close to you guys, but across the northwest as well. How do you think that's, is there going to be a chance for you to try and pick up people as they come into the area and bring them into the ag sector, because the north being so ag heavy?
Absolutely. I think it's always exciting. I think the untapped future is in the non-farming background people. I think they definitely come with fresh eyes, which is what the industry does require. So it's just a matter of trying to captivate them and bring them out onto farm. And I think once we sort of show what we get up to, I think a lot of people are really interested in what we actually do. We do need to open the doors though.
Well, this is the one question I think that sits above everything you speak about and everything we talk about when it comes to getting more people into ag employment, and it's pretty broad, but what needs to be done?
What is the silver bullet? I traveled the world for that. Didn't find the answer. I think it is that perception. I think we do need to make sure that when we're talking about agriculture, we're not just talking about farming. We do need to make sure that we're bringing in the policymakers and yourself as the communicator, the trade and technology people. We need to bring them under the same umbrella of agriculture, and then sort of say that pretty much whatever skills or interests you've got, we've got something in here for you. So just trying to matchmake those people.
A few technical difficulties there, but that's all right. Claire Pelter, as always, a pleasure having you on the program. Thanks for being here and enjoy the rest of the Red Meat Update.
Very good. Thank you very much, Luke.
Claire Pelter there, who is a former Nuffield scholar who was investigating getting more people into ag employment. She's also the livestock manager at her family farm, Logan, near Evandale. That's all from us here at the Red Meat Update side of things. We'll have some more content from this rolling out across the week, but until then, back to you, Tony.
Thank you, Luke Redford, at the Red Meat Update in Launceston. Things humming along smoothly in the red meat sector. Now, later in the program, Richard Bailey with the livestock markets, as well as record highs for the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator. And also a big year for one online auction company. That's all coming up a little bit later in the program. Turning to seafood now, and new export opportunities for Australian seafood will be explored following the announcement of an Australian government grant to Seafood Industry Australia. A funding of nearly $900,000 is aimed at helping the organisation expand existing markets, but also pursuing new markets. Seafood Industry Australia CEO Veronica Papacosta says the funding is a huge boost for seafood producers who've done it tough over the past 18 months.
Yeah, look, it is great news after a really tough time. So obviously impacted by COVID and the inability to, or the limitations on export, although the government did help with the IFAM, the International Air Freight Mechanism, which was very handy. But then the China trade rift caused a whole other world of pain, especially for our lobster and abalone sectors. So this is exciting news after quite a tough time.
So what will this money be used for?
So we've got a few different activities that we'll be funding with the money. One of them will be a whole of industry, a whole of seafood industry strategic plan. And what that will focus on, so we've had such a long-term focus on China as our main market, that this will allow us to focus on expanding into new markets, emerging markets, and looking at out for markets with high growth potential. So it's very much about market diversification and moving away from that single market focus for some of our sectors. That's a really important work. And something that will take a little bit of time and lots of consultation with industry. We'll also be looking at working with Austrade to promote the Great Australian Seafood brand. Now, this is a brand that we were actually able to create domestically through the Australian government's support out of the $1 billion COVID Relief and Recovery Fund. But we're now looking to take that brand international. So what that means is that we can all work under one roof and promote Australian seafood, not just that extra work between each sector. We'll also be appointing two new trade export managers who will be the boots on the ground to be helping impacted sectors and businesses. And we'll also pull together a one-stop shop for Australian seafood exporters. There's a lot of information, a lot of hoops to jump, and we want to pull that together to make it easier for people to export, continue exporting or begin exporting.
How hard has it been to be able to do this when travel has been restricted and being able to get there and on the ground? Have you had to sort of move the way that you do this and do a lot of things over the phone and over Zoom and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, a lot of the work is just getting started now, and we've all become experts in Teams and Zoom. But what we found, the traditional methods of being at international trade shows face-to-face and actually having trade missions where a group of you will take your product over to a country and meet with importers, that's all not available to us. So we have had to get a little bit more clever about the way we do things. So Austrade have been a wonderful support, as has the Department of Agriculture, to help us connect to markets overseas. And having a more diplomatic missions as well, to be able to talk to governments first about the potential in their markets and then have them connect us. So definitely getting more creative and lots of government support as well.
You said about the that creation of, a one-stop shop for seafood exporters. What sort of information are you hoping can be provided in this space?
What's interesting when you're exporting, not even from a sector perspective, from a business perspective, there's certifications that need to happen from an Australian perspective to prepare your business for export. And that can be a minefield, so trying to pull all that together. The information's available, but trying to pull it together and help understand it is important. There's also grants that can sometimes, the grants available for connecting the industry to those grants that may be there to support what they're actually trying to do. And then in the markets themselves that you're looking to, so let's say we're talking Southeast Asia or the Pacific or Europe or the Americas, there can be technical barriers to entry or market barriers to entry that sometimes need to be navigated. And individual businesses don't always have the resource to navigate those on their own. So trying to make it as easy as possible for exporters or people trying to get into export or continue exporting to help look into new markets, I think will be really helpful.
How much does this funding help the industry get back on its feet after this past sort of 18 months?
Look, I think it will be a wonderful way to lay the groundwork and have us working as a whole and taking a whole of industry approach. It is a year one grant, so there is lots of work that has to come after this. But we wanted to lay the groundwork, set the direction so we understand how to make the most of the funding and how to collaborate as an industry so that we're not working as individual businesses or individual sectors, but as a whole of industry approach. Interestingly, we're also looking to work across sectors. So when we're looking at markets, we're looking to work with red meat, with dairy and horticulture, any sector that's looking at the same market, so that we can then connect up to the national brand, the national Australia brand, and actually catapult Australian produce in these markets. So it's really exciting. It's a really exciting time and work, and we're hoping that it benefits businesses on the ground who've been impacted over the last 18 months.
That's Seafood Industry Australia CEO Veronica Papacosta talking there to Brooke Neindorf. Well, the Primary Industries Minister, Guy Barnett, yesterday put pen to paper and officially confirmed the government's $3 million agricultural development fund in Tasmania. There's up to $1 million up for grabs for individual projects, and anyone in Tasmanian agriculture can apply. Tasmanian Farmers and Graziers CEO John McHugh has told Luke Radford why the initiative had his full support.
Oh, look, very pleased from the perspective of the Tasmanian Farmers and Graziers Association, our members, and for agriculture in Tasmania. A terrific announcement today from the Minister and the Government, and we're very grateful for that, and thank the Minister and the Government for making this commitment to agriculture. Having $3 million available to the industry to potentially invest in some of these really important areas where we can not only sort of try and shore up better sustainability, better productivity, but from my point of view, as always in my mind about farmers, is profitability. If you can get good research and development and extension into our industries, solve some problems, help guide farmers in some of the issues that they're facing, increase productivity, increase profitability, that's a great result.
Are any TFGA members you know of ready to apply for this already?
Look, I'm not aware at the moment, Luke, of any that are ready to apply, but I'm sure there are people out there at the moment that are very interested for the announcement of the guidelines and the application. I don't think we're going to have any problem in finding some applications, but I'm not aware of anyone directly today, but the fund's not open yet. When it opens, we will certainly be doing our part to make sure people are aware of it and have the opportunity to apply.
Specifically, which parts of what the Minister mentioned earlier would you like to see the fund invested in?
Oh, look, digital technology I have a personal interest in, but look, I think across all four areas are really important. As I have a particular mantra about in terms of agriculture, is investing in research and development. That is where we can make real demonstrable gains on behalf of our industries, on behalf of our farmers, get that productivity improvements in, get that profitability, but also just help solve some of those problems that might still exist and linger for some time in the, you know, within our various industries. We can put some funds behind it through some institutions, some universities, some researchers, and try and actually make some real difference to some of these issues which might be out there. That's really important.
At the moment, it's a pretty good time for ag, all things considered. Livestock commodity prices across the board are excellent.
Yes.
Do you see this fund as more being about preparing for the next big shock or the next big pitfall that's coming, or taking advantage of the good times of the year now?
I think it is. Certainly, as the Minister alluded to, it is about sustainability. But, you know, whether we're in the great times or good times that we're in at the moment, which is fantastic, this is, you know, it's probably an opportunistic time to be investing for the longer term of our industries and thinking about where we can be investing and making a difference now for sustainability and productivity for the longer term when things aren't quite as good as today. But look, you know, an announcement like this of investing $3 million into agriculture, quite frankly, I'll take that announcement any day of the week.
The CEO of the Tasmanian Farmers and Graziers Association, John McHugh, speaking there with Luke Radford about the government's new $3 million agricultural development fund. Yes, you would take it any time, wouldn't you? Application opens next Friday and will run for 6 weeks. It's open to anyone who's involved in Tasmanian agriculture. Well, a number of young Tasmanians will now not be able to attend the national finals in a series of events like Merino fleece, cattle and poultry judging after the finals were cancelled this week. The locals were gearing up for the national judging finals to be run at Brisbane's Ecker Show next month. Sadly, Agricultural Show Australia has been forced to postpone the finals given the ever-changing COVID border closures across the country. But as Executive Officer Katie Stanley tells Amelia Bernasconi, all competitors will get a chance in the ring sometime.
It is disappointing. It's certainly not what we had planned, but due to the current restrictions in each of the states at the moment, it meant that our national championship competitors for both young judges, paraders and rural ambassadors would be unable to attend the ECCA this year. We had a meeting on Tuesday the 20th, our working group, as well as the organising committee from Queensland Ag Shows, and just due to the increasing uncertainty around the ability of them to attend from interstate, we made the unfortunate decision to postpone the national championships for 2021.
So tell me what sort of events, this is everything, this is the best of the best that every state has to offer, right?
It is the best of the best. These competitors have all started at their local shows. So if you weren't aware, there are 580 agricultural shows around Australia. So they start the process often at their local show. Then they would move on to a group final or a sub-chamber final, depending which state you're talking about. And from there, they would move on to their state final, which is often held at a royal show. And at the state final, those winners are then taken to the national championships. The national championships are rotated around the state, and we also include New Zealand. So this year they were meant to be held at the Ekka, and following on in 2022, they will be held at Sydney Royal.
Now, I know this is early days with this decision and you're looking to postpone the finals. Will it be, are there any other opportunities for it to be piggybacked off a show like, you know, this year should have been the Ekka? Are there any opportunities like that, or is it likely to roll into the next calendar year?
We do have a few fantastic shows that are on the cards. We obviously look to host the national finals at a royal show. So we have Adelaide coming up at the beginning of September. We have Melbourne in October, as well as Perth, as well as Hobart Royal, which is celebrating their 200th year. So Hobart this year will be the first agricultural show to turn 200, which is an amazing feat, I should say. And those are certainly options that we're looking at. There are some other fantastic larger agricultural regional shows that we're looking at. And, you know, there is always an option of looking further into the new year should we feel that with the current situation, COVID is too prevalent and the risk would be too high.
That's the Agricultural Show Australia Executive Officer Katie Stanley speaking there with Amelia Bernasconi. After the judging events were cancelled at the Ekka, they were due to be held at the Ekka. Wouldn't it be great if they were held later this year at the Hobart Show? We'll keep you posted on the new date the board decides on. Time now to check the latest on the weather. Anna Forrest joins us from the Bureau. Hello, Anna.
Hiya, Tony. How's things?
Yeah, pretty good. Looks good out there. A bit of sunshine about. Is that the case for the most of the state?
Most of the state's actually got some cloud around, and the north has picked up a couple of millimetres since 9 o'clock. 2 millimetres, in fact, at Sheffield and also at Lowhead and Deloraine Railway. So it's a little bit damp up the north coast. Just some shower activity going through there at the moment.
Okay. Not too much in the gauge there?
No, just a couple of mils.
Yeah. Okay, now it's going to be a very interesting couple of days coming up, and especially if you live near the water in certain areas of the state.
That's right. We've got a frontal system coming through onto the west coast tonight, and it's basically sitting there and developing a low pressure system. Now, we're not exactly sure where the low pressure system is, but we're pretty sure it's going to be fairly deep, and that means that it's going to increase the height of the sea because it just sort of like a bit of a vacuum effect pulls the sea up a little bit, and that will give us abnormally high tides. We're expecting those across the western part of the state, or the western coastal areas, in the afternoon, and then around the south and lower part of the east coast in the evening. Starting today, but they'll be more so tomorrow, and then starting to ease off on Sunday. So the high tides are going to be abnormally high in those areas. So that's about 40 to 50 millimetres. Centimetres. Yeah. I was thinking rainfall. No, centimetres higher than the highest astronomical tides. So now, the high tide mark, add another bit.
Now, in the old metric system, that's about 19, 20 inches, isn't it? That's a fair amount.
40, 50 centimetres. I always work on 30 centimetres is 12 inches. So, okay. Yeah, right. It's getting, you know, sort of up there.
Getting up there. A couple of ruler lengths long or higher than normal, yeah.
Yep.
Apart from the tides then, what sort of weather can we expect?
Wet, windy and getting cold. So that low pressure system / front / complex area of not very nice weather is going to introduce a cold pool over the in the upper atmosphere across the state on Sunday. So that's just going to drop temperatures drastically. And, of course, it's going to be very windy as it's moving through. We're looking at quite strong winds around right through Saturday, Sunday, and ease off on Monday and then come back on Tuesday, Wednesday into next week. So just a series of fronts, a lot of wind and some precipitation, but very cold, particularly on Sunday, and those abnormally high tides. So the winds basically are going to be northwest to westerly for today and tomorrow, getting up to about 40 knots through the northern and western areas of the state, and then 20 to 30 knots elsewhere around the state. Over the land, gusts up to about 80 kilometres an hour, so they're not making the criteria for damaging winds, but it will be gusty.
You are not painting a very nice picture.
If you have to do something outside on the weekend,
don't
rug up and take a lot of precautions. So yeah. Try not to.
Okay. Well, we got warnings, I'm assuming.
We do, yes. That abnormally high tide warning is for both tonight and tomorrow, or today and tomorrow. Strong wind warning today for southwestern and western coastal waters, southeast Cape to Sandy Cape. Tomorrow it becomes a gale warning that goes from southeast Cape to St Helens Point for north to northwest winds, excludes Bank Strait and Franklin Sound, and strong wind warning for all remaining coastal waters and the Central Plateau Lakes. So windy, and it's going to be worse on Sunday.
Yeah, so probably don't go boating over the weekend, but we'll do the coastal waters and swell anyway.
Okay, so today north-northwesterly is 15 to 25 knots. I'll reach up to 30 knots in the west, easing to 10 to 20 knots about the east for a period this afternoon. Sea is 1 to 2 metres across the north and east and reaching 2 to 3 metres elsewhere. And the swell, 3 to 4 metres in the west and south from a southwesterly direction. And up to 2 to 3 metres offshore in the south, everywhere else around about a metre. Tomorrow, those northwesterly winds are going to be 20 to 30 knots about the west and southwest, 15 to 25 knots elsewhere, and they'll strengthen to 30 to 40 knots about the west and north, and 20 to 30 knots everywhere else during the early afternoon. Then they'll turn west to northwesterly from the west during the evening. They'll ease a little bit about the east and south, but not too much. Winds, seas rising to 3 to 4 metres about the west and north, grading 2 to 3 metres everywhere else. And the swells about the west and south, we're looking at southwesterlies at 3 to 5 metres, across the northwesterly 1 to 1.5 metres, and up the east coast, half to 2 metres of southerly, trending southwesterly in the south. The wave rider at the moment, the Cape Sorel one, is on 3.2 metres with a max at 4.6, and the Maria Island is 1.4 with a max at 2.4.
Okay, Anna, thank you for that. You have a lovely weekend, despite your forecast.
I'll stay inside, so it will be lovely. Thank you, Tony.
Good on you. Anna Forrest.
It's the Country Hour with Tony Briscoe on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
From the Bureau, of course, with one of those forecasts she probably doesn't like doing, but, you know, it's the job, isn't it? And it lets us know what to expect over the weekend. So keep yourself safe and keep yourself warm and keep yourself dry, too, if you're living near the shoreline. Well, the Nubina branch of the Country Women's Association has been reinvigorated by an influx of new members. The rush of support followed news the dwindling branch could close. Now with 40 members, the youngest just 10 years old, the small CWA branch has big plans for the future. David Barnett Clement has the story.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm Ella Hoban-Kelleher. We're here at our farm, Premedina Hill, on the Tasman Peninsula, and we have a cattle farm and a vineyard.
Distance and isolation is part and parcel of farming in rural areas. For Ellen Hoban-Kelleher, just ducking off to the neighbours for a cup of sugar doesn't really happen.
Oh, look, my husband and I are both very social people, and I think that was one of the hardest things for us to get used to when we first moved down here, is that, you know, we really like that interaction with people. And being here, you know, on the farm, it's normally just us and the kids, and it is really nice to get out and see other people and have those conversations in the community.
The institution that has supported rural and regional women for decades is the CWA, the Country Women's Association.
It's early days for me, but one thing I've definitely noticed was being in the CWA hall, it feels like a really safe space. You know, people go there whether they're having a good day or a bad day, whether they've got talent on their own or they're bringing their kids along or whatever. And you just get a feeling that people can just speak openly about whatever's going on in their lives. And I've been really surprised with some of the people that I've already known beforehand, but I've caught up with them down at the CWA and they've spoken to me in a really frank way that I haven't seen them do before. And it's just, I think it's providing that kind of environment for people, which is really important.
Ella joined just in time. With most of the remaining members in their 80s and interest in the community declining, the local Nubina branch of the CWA was set to shut up shop.
When the young people discovered that they were at risk of losing the hall, the room that the CWA meets in, which is such a community asset, they realised that if they didn't step in and take over CWA, the community would lose access to the hall.
This is Kate Sainsbury, the former secretary of the Nubina branch.
And so that was the catalyst, really, that tipped us into this marvellous situation where we've got the young ones running it. I follow along with what they're doing, but because I'm physically less active, I am 89 years old, and at that age you really do slow down. And I have had to slow down. And the other thing is, of course, the young ones often only have free time late afternoon and evening, whereas that's my time for coming home and collapsing.
After a lifetime in the organisation, Kate says she's very comfortable handing over the reins.
Oh, only too happy. That's the whole point of it. You've got to hand it on to the younger generation. We couldn't just go on as a lot of old biddies clucking over our cups of tea in the afternoon and wondering where the young ones were. We found out where they were, and we've said, here you are, it's yours. And I think they're doing great things.
Rebecca Howarth is the new president of the Nubina CWA and believes the association still has an important role to play in Australian communities.
The CWA is a very traditional organisation. It is steeped in history. It's over 100 years old in Australia. And I see it moving forward now, advocating for issues for modern women, looking at what are the topical issues today, what do our rural communities need. I'd never considered joining, to be honest, up until only recently. So this is all quite new for me. But I've always known of its importance to the community and the fact that the building here is a very historic one, has a lot of history and is used by different community groups as well. So I see our branch moving forward, taking those traditional skills that the older members of the community can share with us, building on those intergenerational connections, and then really bring that forward into the future in a way that we can really strengthen those intergenerational connections and be a pillar for this community.
There's a sense wanting to make sure that you're carrying on the integrity that's come before. I mean, it's a really well-respected institution, the CWA, and there's certainly a feeling amongst the newcomers, I think, that we're wanting to just make sure that we're not disrupting that. You know, we want to carry on what's been done before. We want to learn from the people that have come before and what they've done. And while you want to bring new energy into something, you also don't want to reinvent the wheel. And I think we're all sort of slowly just taking time to get a feel for what's come before and how we can just slowly build on that.
And that was mixed farmer Ellen Hoban-Kelleher ending that report from David Barnett Clement about the Nubina branch of the Country Women's Association revitalised. And if you'd like more details on that story, head to ABC News Online, ABC Rural as well, and keep an eye on the 7 p.m. news bulletin tonight on ABC TV. You will see that story with our very own David Barnett Clement. 0438 922 936 is our text line number. Lawrence has sent me a text and a photo too. Lawrence is delivering the first load of grain to the new dairy at the Sheffield School Farm. Thank you for that, Lawrence. Dairy looks great. Looks new, modern, clean. No cows in there at the moment, but obviously they will be there because you've delivered the grain. And I think our reporter in the north will go along there and have a look at that new school dairy. Okay, back to the red meat sector now. The price of cattle has hit a significant level never seen before in the country. The benchmark Eastern Young Cattle Indicator hitting over the $10 per kilogram mark for the first time in its history. The EKI, calculated by Meat and Livestock Australia, it's a 7-day rolling average of young cattle from 25 sale yards across Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria. Now, the current rally has lasted longer than many in the industry have predicted. MLA Market Information Manager Stephen Bignall says yesterday it hit the 1,003 cents per kilogram carcass weight, 34% up year on year. And he added a big sale at Roma in Queensland last week pushed the rates higher still.
We did have last week in Roma a yearling sale, and also the Maranoa Council was donating 50% of selling fees to the Royal Flying Doctor. That helped sort of push the price up higher last week, but this week it stayed high, and those conditions that weren't there. There wasn't the wiener sale, and there wasn't the donation charity. So the prices have stayed up there this week, and even got higher on the back of restocker demand. So the restockers have come out in force. So that's producers looking to buy cattle for their properties after years of destocking, and really driving that is the rain. We've seen that obviously southeast Queensland got a lot of rain in the late June and early July, and that's really been pushing the prices up.
It's only hit a number of areas, but it seems mud does make money. It's just been enough to kick this price up and keep it on that upward trend. In terms of the rise, people were saying it, and really looking at the graph, it's such a steep rise. Have you ever seen that before?
It's pretty significant. It obviously kicked up quite significant when rain happened on the East Coast in March last year, like March 2020. It is up 34% on this time last year, and it's up 92% on 2019 levels.
Obviously, Meat and Livestock Australia's HQ, and I assume the National Livestock Reporting Services HQ, is in Sydney, where you're currently in lockdown. Did a lot of this work have to happen on computers working from home?
It's the same system that we always use. Is we do have the LMOs, livestock market officers, they're out in the field, and they send the reports in. And a lot of places in sort of Queensland and New South Wales, that those livestock officers have been still out in the field. One interesting thing we have had this week is we've had bigger yardings and a higher price, which is a really interesting dynamic.
Incredible having those factors coming together and culminating in over $1,000, $1,003 for the Ecky. Amazing.
It's really crazy. It does show that producers can still make a margin, because this is obviously steers, so there won't be a calf dropped out of these. Steers are driving it. So the average young yearling steer is averaging $1,009 per kilogram carcass weight, and there's 7,800 of them in the Ecky at the moment. So there's obviously no calf, and people are able to make a margin out of these high prices. We are seeing lighter cattle sort of favoured at the moment, light young steers, and people can make a margin when they then offload them to the processor or kept through the feeders.
So Stephen Bignell, where to from here? It's over the fabled $10 mark. Will it go higher?
I wouldn't really speculate on the market price where it's going, given that it's just exceeded all everyone's expectations. There are a lot of comments it wouldn't go above 800, then 900 and 1,000. So I'm not going to speculate, but the dynamics that we're seeing are truly unprecedented.
Yeah, we'll have Richard Bailey's take on it shortly. That was Stephen Bignell, the Market Information Manager from Meat and Livestock Australia, speaking with Ali Felton-Taylor. Well, it's not just the livestock agents that are benefiting. The online livestock agent Auctions Plus has reported strong gains in the number of sales held on its platform. Peter Somerville, our reporter, spoke with the company's chief economist, Tim McRae.
We saw 4.4 million head of sheep offered through the platform in the last 12 months and 814,000 head of cattle. So, really busy times. And we've also seen a big expansion into outside of sheep and cattle with our machinery and clearance rates, everything from working dogs to alpacas to camels. So it's been a very busy year.
Tell me about that, because if you look at it percentage-wise, I believe it's machinery and clearance sales that are up the most.
Yeah, machinery clearance sales have really taken off in 2021. And look, that was partly, a lot of it was due to the movement restrictions that all the states faced. We saw a lot of the agents pushing sales onto our platform, and the response we've had both from vendors having sales but also participants is that they really enjoy having the sale online. It gives them a lot more time to browse the portfolio of what's available, if you like. And we've seen a 400% growth in the last 12 months. So an interesting development, certainly one that the business was looking to grow that area, but probably not grow it that quick, that soon.
Yeah, can you keep it up? Do you think many of them will stick around?
Yeah, look, what's really been interesting is the ones that have now come back for the second year in a row. Not necessarily clearing sales, but certainly machinery sales. So I think the platform has given much wider exposure for what they are selling. It's also taken, for some people, the need to travel to check machinery out, or clearing sales even. But we think it can be maintained.
We should, of course, also talk about sheep, cattle, livestock numbers. Have they been driven up by coronavirus and sales being cancelled and that sort of thing as well? Or is it purely just more being sold across the board?
Yeah, I think much less so than the machinery and clearance sales. I mean, sale yards for the large instance were open and continue to trade right through that period. really what Auctions Plus has seen since it's been in existence is when we see good seasons and we do see a rising market, a lot more people are looking to offer their product through Auctions Plus. And I think there's a variety of reasons there, but particularly the flexibility that's offered in that, you know, they can offer a line of cattle or a mob of sheep and not necessarily have the pressure to have them off their property due to dry conditions. So part of it, a lot of it has been the good seasonal conditions, and the vendors are able to put a good, you know, a reserve price on their stock, but not urgent to have to sell them, which really works as a positive for our platform.
And if we come back to the prices, I imagine it's been a pretty good year on that front as well. Have you got any data on how the average prices have performed over the year?
Oh, look, we saw average prices across some categories up 30 to 40% for the average hire for the fiscal year. I know, looking at the results, we had almost 100,000 head of PTIC heifers offered throughout the year, and their average price was up 30% on the previous year. And well up on, you know, there was a huge premium for anything that was had breeding potential, and really that reflects the season of the rebuild we're in. And even, you know, the young cattle that we see, the price there was up 20 to 30%, which matched all the other sale yards and physical prices that were happening through the year.
Yeah, some amazing numbers there. Auctions Plus Chief Economist Tim McRae speaking with Peter Somerville about the amazing fiscal year they've had. Didn't expect to expand so quickly. Well, it is Friday afternoon. That means the livestock markets with Richard Bailey. How are you going, Richard?
Going well, Tony. Going well.
I tell you what is going well, and we know it, the red meat industry at the moment, the red meat update in Launceston, we had it earlier on in the program. Things are just humming along, as we know, well know, Richard, but how long will it go on for the crystal ball again?
That's the crystal ball one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I wrote an article during the week about certainly the banking industry and their critique of the beef industry particularly are nervous as to how sustainable it is. I'm not sure that they've got a full understanding of the fact that we are still at record low number of cattle Australia-wide, and we've got what is shaping up as being a magnificent season basically right up the eastern seaboard.
Yeah.
And I think those two things together, I mean, I'm not into predicting this and that, but I think those two things together I've got to weigh pretty heavily on what your forward thinking is.
Yeah, exactly. And the Eastern Young Cattle Indicator up the $10 a kilo mark, never been seen before. So, yeah, you just wonder, will it go any higher? Can it go any higher? Is it sustainable?
Well, a lot of that indicator is pushed by the restockers and the feeders. So, you know, what they do with grain, you know, there's the old story, isn't it, that you know, a beef producer with grass is dangerous. and the feedlotters just don't seem to be holding back at all. The dollar is now back at a probably more palatable rate for the exporters. The unknown, I think, is the export markets. You know, how it'll all pan out over the next 12 to 18 months. Because as someone I read somewhere said, you know, it's fine to pay, you know, $1,800 now for store cattle, but at the moment you can probably turn them around and get them into $28,000 to $3,000 a head cattle, but, you know, it takes 6 or 8 months to get the cattle you buy now to that stage, and whether or not that money's still going to be there, we won't know.
Yeah. Okay, well, I suppose the way to find out what is happening is to be at the livestock markets, and you go out there every week, and what's the sentiment?
Oh, I think the sentiment... there were people that walked out last Thursday without having a bid, and, you know, people that normally do buy cattle, and they were shaking their heads. But there were plenty of people quite happy to step up to the plate. And our store price is still, you know, in lots of cases, close to 100 cents a kilo live weight less than what's happening in Victoria and southern New South Wales. So there's still a little bit of room to move there, probably. Hard to know. Just in the prime markets in Victoria this week, a lot of the better cattle just eased off a little bit because they've been absolutely going mad. But a lot of the, like, the veilers at Pakenham on Monday made 428 to 538 cents a kilo, and yearling heifers 410 to 500 cents. Grown steers 440 and bullocks made 420 to 430 cents a kilo. Bullocks are just, they eased off about another 10 cents this week, but still selling exceptionally well. The market that's very strong at the moment is the cow market. A lot of these cows are going into the United States, and most of the heavy cows are packing them. The good quality heavy cows made 350 to 385 cents a kilo. You know, I don't reckon we've seen that sort of money ever before, but it's putting a lot of these cows, you know, the big heavy cows, it's putting them at $2,500, $2,600. So, pretty good return for an old cow.
I reckon. All right, the red meat side of it, the cattle section, what about the lamb and sheep?
Just before we leave the cattle, just a reminder to everyone, 3 weeks from yesterday is our next store sale at Perenna. If you've got cattle and you're not quite sure, it'd be probably a pretty good time to have a chat to your agent and assess where you're actually at, because while the current prices are where they're at, it might be prudent to, you know, visit that idea of selling some store cattle at the moment. But anyway, that's up to the producers and the agents. But just a word, it makes it easier for the agents if they know what's in front of them. So that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Lamb market improved during the week. I'm not sure we're not getting perhaps just a little bit tight on numbers in places, just looking at what I'm seeing. Although at Wagga yesterday, there was still another 41,000 lambs. Extraordinary. And the numbers of new season lambs were the same as last week, about 1,000. But just about all the lambs were $10 to $15 dearer yesterday. It meant that a lot of the averages sat in the 900s. A lot of the better trade lambs averaging sort of 940 to 950 cents a kilo. And even the big heavy lambs over 30 kilos, they average 885 cents a kilo. That's getting close to 80 cents more than they were probably 3 weeks ago. The reports are that most of the big exporters were in the market, and the trade buyers, the supermarkets and those sort of guys, they've had to push into those heavy lambs. And at Wagga yesterday, they were heavy. There's a really good clip on social on that sale. I think if you go into Riverina Livestock, I think it's called, or something like that, it's well worth looking at the first two rows of lambs that were sold. They were big lambs. Earlier in the week, similar sort of story, but not quite as dear as that. And that's what I was saying. I think even with the 40,000 yesterday, and the market's still very strong, I think probably indicates that there's just going to be a little few weeks when there might be a little bit of a shortage of lambs, which will cause this before we see the new season's lambs come into play. Mutton market was pretty similar to last week up there yesterday. Most of the averages are 630, 640 cents a kilo. It means that your big heavy sheep are making sort of $200 to $250 a head, and then most of your rest of your sheep making anywhere from $150 to $180 a head, which, as we've said many times, Tony, is good money for old sheep.
Okay, well, you have a great weekend, Richard.
Hope your footy team wins.
Yes, wherever they're playing. Richard Bailey, our livestock reporter, back with the Country Hour next Wednesday. Would be nice if he had 20 or 30 cattle to sell, wouldn't it, at the moment? He'd make some big bickies. Anyway, have a happy and safe weekend. Don't forget ABC Rural Online. Plenty of stories to look at there, and ABC Rural Facebook page. And we'll catch you after midday on Monday with another edition of the Country Hour and a couple of special stories we're working on for next week. We'll have some very interesting stories coming up on the Country Hour for you next week. As I say, have a happy and safe weekend, and we'll see you after midday on Monday.